I'm Imogen.
I'm Cassandra.
And I'm Victoria, and we come from Facing History at Regent Park Focus. Our mission is to find out what makes us bystanders and what makes us upstanders. As a kid, I was always inspired by documentaries and people like Craig Kielburger and the man who started the Kony campaign, but I never did anything because I felt powerless and alone, and I never really talked to anybody about it until this year. I always looked up to organizations like the UN and the government to make big changes. But the truth is, communication and collaborations in your society can make the biggest change. For example, and talking to people and trying to make a difference could do something.
We decided to talk to a couple people at our schools to find out how they feel about participation. Okay, do you hear about global issues in the news, TV, radio, things like that?
In all honesty, I actually do believe it's filtered from us, and it's actually not fully thrown at us, like, this is what's happening, this is how you can solve it. So I would say no.
When you hear about those issues, filtered or not, do you ever feel inclined to stand up and help things that could be happening millions of miles away?
Sadly, I don't. Like, I obviously have my own opinions against them and all that, and whenever it comes out in topic or a teacher asks, like, oh, what happened interesting this week, I'll obviously say that and specify where I feel about it. But I feel it's kind of hard now to just help out with a million miles away. Like, obviously, one person can make the biggest difference.
So locally within your community, if there's issues, do you feel inclined to help in those kind of things?
Today, I would actually say no, because I do believe the sense of community is starting to end, especially in Toronto, where I feel like everybody's starting to branch out and become their one small, seclusive groups. So I don't necessarily think there's any more community, per se.
Next, we interviewed Lucas Donald, an engaged 16-year-old trying to make change in his very own community.
So what steps have you taken in order to make and promote change in your community?
Well, I have in the past volunteered for an organization called the Pine Project in Toronto, which their goal as a nonprofit charity organization is to reconnect kids and their parents especially, but also teens and older people, to nature, because it's part of their belief system that in order to have a positive change on the environment, you have to have a connection with it and not just follow guidelines from the outside.
And what inspired you to do that?
I would say mostly natural love for that kind of work, especially being in nature, but also working with kids, for sure.
How do you think other people can do the same?
Always looking to the cause of those problems and not just thinking about an easy solution.
We also interviewed Samantha Kino-Shimeg, who was born and raised in Sudbury. She has lived in North Bay and Toronto and now resides in Barrie. She is an Ojibwe woman whose family is from Manitoulin Island. When asked what Samantha wants her own role to be in helping to rebuild and shape her community, she says that it's not about what she wants, but taking into consideration the generations that are coming after her. The decisions and actions she takes today will affect the future of her people. Indigenous people live in such small groups today that their individual accountability is rarely questioned.
So, what makes someone a bystander? Maybe it depends on the situation for some people. But what about a situation like Kitty Genovese's murder? She was a 28-year-old who was stabbed to death in front of her apartment complex. The attack lasted over 30 minutes and was witnessed by several dozen people. Nobody reported the crime, and some witnesses didn't report it because they assumed someone else had already called the police. Think about that situation. Imagine if someone who assumed the police had been called already called the police anyway. Being a bystander can be scary and uncomfortable, but when it comes to being a bystander, less is more. Especially in this case, it was Kitty's life. So we decided to get a professional opinion behind the psychology of a bystander.
Igor Grossman, an assistant professor with the Department of Psychology at the University of Waterloo. His current research goals are to understand the processes that enable individuals to think and act wisely.
Dr. Grossman kindly accepted to tell us a bit about the psychology behind bystanders. So, Dr. Grossman, do you think the need to behave in a correct and socially acceptable way explains the bystander effect?
Well, of course, the norms drive our behavior to some extent.
for instance, in emergency situations, our culture tells us that we should stay cool and be organized, not to panic, and possibly not engage. But the problem is that many things in our lives, including the norms, societal norms, are often unconscious. So much of the bystander effect, for instance, is unconscious. The psychological evidence, the research that was done to examine this phenomenon, suggests that people are actually not aware why they are not helping. If asked, would you help, they tend to say, yeah, of course I will help. I was just not sure if this person was really in pain. In fact, there is research suggesting that people do tend to help if they see somebody else helping.
What Professor Grossman explained was an essential element to the explanation of bystanders. When most people are asked, they say that, yes, they will do something about a situation when placed in one. But the truth is, most people don't, and that this reaction to situations is subconscious. The other thing is that humans mimic each other, so when nobody's doing anything, we feel it's okay that we don't do anything either. So if one person surpasses the subconscious inclination to be a bystander, then other people could follow that example, and you could have a community of people who have the same intention to help.
There are 7,234,000,000 people in the world today. 870 million are hungry, 3 billion live in poverty, and 5,219 are without a home in the streets of my very own city. It has become a common occurrence to turn our backs on many of these people in their time of need. Perhaps you crossed the street in fear and shame when you saw a homeless person begging on the street. Maybe you know someone in school desperately in need of a companion, but you already have your own circle of friends, so you don't reach out, and you label all these things as not your problem. I have often let myself feel helpless when I think about issues in my community or overseas. I decide there is no way I could make a difference on such a massive globe where so many people suffer. I feel tiny. I feel there is no point of sitting on this globe. Walls go up within communities, separating individuals and minimizing the importance of empathy, compassion, and community. One tiny action will break the wall of fear. Fear of participating and fear of reaching out. Maybe even having a deep and conscious conversation about change with your friend or your teacher or your parent could start cracking that wall. And when others see that example, soon one minuscule dent could turn into a giant gaping hole.